You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour Show number 239. With me, of course, Trish McFarland. What's up, Trish? What's happening?
Hey, Steve. I am not jet lagged. How about that?
Awesome. Hey, I got a question for you just right off the bat, Trish. Soda or pop?
Oh, my gosh. Soda. Of course. I'm from the Midwest. Do you say pop?
So here's an interesting thing. At least to me only. I grew up in New Jersey where it was soda. Now I live in Western New York, upstate/Western New York, where it is pop. And It was on my mind today because in a record time, Trish, I drop a little reference to the Steve Bowes blog. In the first minute of the show, I blogged about soda and or pop today. So it was on my mind, so I thought I'd ask you.
Oh, I thought maybe it's because you keep saying you want Diet Dr. Pepper to be our sponsor.
I sure do, Dr. Pepper.
I bet they call it soda.
I'll call it whatever they want, Trish. I'll call it Diet Dr. Pepper no matter what it is.
I'm going to work on them because you actually love them so much. I mean, you do talk. Here, I brought them up this time, but you usually mention them. So
I believe I had two today, as a matter of fact. I'm not counting.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I did.
I felt good.
I don't really... Okay, this will sound crazy and totally off topic, but I only really buy soda to cook with. So I make Coca-Cola cake, and then I make those crazy biscuits made with 7-Up that you can find like all over, you know, Facebook or Pinterest or wherever people put that.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on Pinterest, Trish.
Pinterest.
I'm very aware of it.
Hey, I don't either, but you know, it shows up on Facebook.
I'm going to tell you what. This is my. I had several notes I prepared for the show for 6 or 8 minutes before we started.
Did you?
Yes.
Good.
And so I wanted to ask the soda or pop question, which we've covered. I had another note here. Instagram, Trish, which is probably the only thing I actually like and sort of use regularly.
Right.
They're now switching from the normal reverse chronological feed, show you everything that you're following. They're moving away from that too, was announced this week.
Really?
To an algorithmic type feed, you know, just like everyone else has done, to try to show you the things it thinks, you know, you want to see. And I'm just bummed out about that too. Bummed out.
Yeah, I hate that. See, it's going the way of Facebook, I think. Well,
which is terrible, and it's all going to hell. So that's it. That's my first word problem.
Wonderful.
So what else? Should we start the show, or should we just ramble on a little further?
No, let's start the show.
I had more notes. I did. I had like two more.
No, we'll save them. Let's save them for next time.
We'll
you don't want to go through all your notes.
No.
I mean,
all
that preparation for nothing.
No, don't want to waste it. So, yeah. So, Trish, you've lined up a great guest for today's show. I'd like you to take over now, and I'm going to just lay back and look good like I sort of like to do.
That's your new role, right?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Exactly.
Okay. So, you know what I was thinking, though? It typically, when I line up the guests, it goes differently than when you do for some reason. Yours are always... you know, truly tech focused and all of that. Me, it has to do something with music. I don't know why that is, but that's how it works, right? So, you know, we had Peter Cook on, remember?
I do.
You know, of course, talked about music as well as HR and leadership. And so today, even more excited this time because I have guest on Alexa Schoen. She is someone I would say in a nice way I stalk and quite accidentally because... I think we tweeted first about Snapchat and then got on Snapchat, but I feel like I know her because I actually watch her live her life every single day on Snapchat. So it's completely addicting. So I feel so close. So why don't I bring her on and then we'll talk a little bit about her background and go from there. So Alexa, welcome to the show.
Well, hello you two. Thank you for that lovely, if not slightly creepy introduction.
I know, right? It sounds creepy, doesn't it? It's like you see people online. Do you feel that way too? Do you have people that you follow that you feel like you know and really have never met or talked to them?
I, I do. I follow a couple people. There's one in particular, one woman who sort of started the whole Snapchat documentary style filming, and her name is Yes Jules, Julz, I think. And
Okay.
so she's kind of like the thought leader in this realm. And so I watch her every day, and I actually, me being me, which we'll get to in a second, got her on the phone once a couple weeks ago, and I felt like I was talking to someone that I totally stalked. So I
Yes.
do feel your pain.
It's funny, but I will tell you this. I have only been on Snapchat. I've had it for, I guess, a long time, back when it used to probably be used for other things, which I was not using it for. But lately, I do feel like there are more and more people who are getting on there and sharing their day, and whether that's, following their work, escapades and things like that. But I feel like even people that I know in person, what they share on Snapchat is completely different. And I get a whole different insight into them as a person. I mean, what about you? Are you following your friends like that and like learning about them or?
I do. I don't know if any of my friends use it in an interesting enough way for me to feel like I'm getting a new insight necessarily, except for maybe learning what their work commute looks like. But I do think that it is kind of up and coming. And I think, I don't know if you two are familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk and his work with VaynerMedia, but I think he's sort of known to be the one true thought leader in social media right now, and as close to a fortune teller as we can get. And he's all about Snapchat, so I swear to God, there's been this whole swoop of people by the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, joining Snapchat because he said it was going to be the new thing.
Oh, interesting. Well, I love it. I definitely see both, fun use for it and business use for it. So thanks for letting me follow along in your life and your day.
Oh, well,
The
you're
only other thing I'm going to
welcome.
say about that is you're currently based in Berlin. So one of the most intriguing things initially for me was just I've never been to Berlin. So you show a lot of the city when you're traveling around, and it's actually really interesting to see it as you're walking or riding. So kind of an
Thank
interesting
you.
thing for those of us in the US who have not been there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it is such a wonderful city, and I can tell you that I moved here effectively sight unseen. I'd never been before, and I did this sort of one-way ticket, or I should say 6-week exploration visit, because Berlin has a really strong startup community, and we sort of explain it as the Silicon Valley of Europe, which is what I do in my day job when I'm not Snapchatting, at least. And so it's such a wonderful, welcoming place. There's an amazing international community, and above that, it's just such a brilliantly safe and happy city. I can walk home at 3 in the morning by myself, and people wave to me on the streets. It's weirdly cheerful around here for, the old Eastern Bloc.
Wow. Well, you touched on your work a little bit. Why don't you just, in general, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, what you're up to, and then we can maybe get into it a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. So I am, let's see, a classic member of the millennial generation, in that I am in my late 20s and I am a full hyphen employee, or I should say not employee, but I've pieced together a lot of work from a lot of different parts of my life. And so I pretty much do three main things right now. The first is I run a quite successful freelance career as a communications consultant and user experience copywriter for fast growth startups in Berlin. And so, like I mentioned, there's a huge startup community here. And I got my background originally, my first couple jobs back in the States even were all in social media and PR and coming more from a marketing perspective. But especially when you're dealing with fast growth companies that are then all of a sudden translating their work into 17 different languages and hiring a billion different people where the office language by default is going to be English anyways, but all these people who are working on the product don't necessarily all speak native English. Things get very complicated with communications very quickly. And so I sort of specialize in this sort of overarching brand communication tone, and then bringing it down to a really, really granular level. Like if a company is opening a new mobile app, for example, what should all this copy say on every page? And what should the app look like when you first open the screen? And completing the entire user journey all the way through, and doing that all in English, regardless of whether or not it's actually the language that the app is going to be in. but keeping in mind that there has to be one center focus, usually around a call to action, and then working with translation teams to put that into a variety of languages.
You know, that's really interesting. I always wondered about how some of that got done with these, like, you know, worldwide kind of applications and programs. And I do, and every time I think about it, Trish and Alex, I feel so fortunate that sort of the default language, international language of business, like, you know, the default, you know, that most people use, happens to be the one language I know. Like, I feel really lucky.
Yeah.
Like, it turned out that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And when you start getting outside the US, it is pretty darn amazing especially when I see couples, for example, walking down the street together and they're speaking to each other in English and it's neither of their native languages. And I'm like, wow, American TV did that. That's wild.
That's interesting. Anywhere I've traveled to, same thing. I always feel at least somewhat comfortable because I can, you know, get around. I don't feel like, you know, I'm having to think everyone's talking about me in a language I don't understand or something. So very cool.
Absolutely.
Cool
yeah,
job.
So that's one part of what I've been doing. And then as you mentioned earlier, Trish, I am also a jazz singer, jazz and soul singer. And I actually did my master's in jazz performance, and actually I did it in England. I know you were just in London yourself. And so I studied at a little conservatory in Northern England. Had an absolutely wonderful time. I've been a singer my entire life, and I always explained that master's was, you know, my version of doing a gap year. I had a blast. I learned so much, and it's now later in life, I would say, becoming a bigger and bigger part of my life. I just did a Kickstarter last year where I kind of crowdfunded this covers album where if people gave me money, then I let them vote on what songs made it onto the album. And I've now toured that album across two different continents and done three different music videos. And then, of course, released the album, which is called The Human Jukebox Project, me being the human jukebox. And that was just a couple weeks ago, I guess, right?
So that's what I'm doing for me to get it onto my playlist for London, as a matter of fact. So
yeah, I know. I'm really excited about it being out there and people actually listening to it.
How does that feel? How's the feedback? I mean, are you getting lots of comments and calls and messages? Or?
Yeah, I am. It's a bit surreal, actually, especially because I've got to a point now in my creative career where I have fans that are not people that I know in real life. And it's sort of funny. I've been joking about how awkward it is to get your first couple fans because you're basically just inviting strangers to come and hang out with you.
Right, right. Well, I have to tell you, it's funny. My kids have been listening to it, especially my daughter. She's 12. And she just loves it. She says it's so different. So she had a question for me to ask you once we got you on the show. She wanted to know, have you ever thought of competing in any kind of, you know, competition, television competition, like maybe The Voice or, you know, American Idol, something like that? Have you ever?
Such as, but not limited to The Voice.
Right.
I have been asked that question many times. Excellent question. And I think I was 12 when American Idol first came out. Wow. And so I sort of grew up with that being a really popular thing for me. I did actually go partway through the X Factor auditions when it was first coming over to the States. I think I was a senior at Notre Dame. That's where I did my undergrad. And so I flew out to LA for the weekend and did the whole cattle call thing. And it was really interesting to see because when you see behind the scenes on that stuff, you remember that this is actually, you know, a content creation, we're making a TV show, this is showbiz baby business. And to be honest, it was my second semester at Notre Dame. The audition process was just a mess. It was the first time, you know, this new show was doing it. And I didn't get rejected. I walked out.
No.
for all we know, I could have been the next American Idol or X Factor winner. But I had a couple weeks left at college and I wanted to go back and hang out with my friends. But I have partially done it once before.
Oh, I will have to let her know. Her other thing was just a comment. She said she really loves when you sing Serpents and it's very dark.
It is very dark. It is. That was a song request. I had never known that song before this album. But like I said, I sort of let different people choose what songs they wanted me to sing. And me being the marketing freak that I am, I was like, oh, well, if you give me a certain number of dollars, you can just, you know, request a song and reserve it on the album. And that was the very first song that a friend of mine named Chelsea picked. And she was like, yeah, I want you to do this underground hip hop song. It's called Serpents. I really think you'll like it. And so I sort of ran with it. And that's what we came up with.
Good. Well, it's brilliant. So for anyone who has not heard it yet, right, they can see a couple of the videos on YouTube. I know a couple are out there. Where can they actually go and download the Human Jukebox project?
Yeah, if you go to alexashoen.com, and that's AlexaShoen, you will be able to download it from right now Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and it's coming to Spotify and iTunes in the next couple weeks.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, one of the things that one of the other things that Alexa does that really just caught my attention right from the start is something that she's been working on. It's really, hopefully I'm not describing this improperly, but it's more of a movement called Entry Level Boss. And it's not just a program or, a one-time thing on one platform. It's just this whole idea of helping people in their quarter life crisis, right?
I'm calling BS on the quarter life crisis. Come on. That's not really a thing.
I'm sure you haven't had yours yet, right?
Right. No.
If I ever get to that point, I'll let you know. But no, I can't believe that's a true thing.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll let Alexa explain exactly what it is. But what caught my attention is that, number one, she's created something about a year ago that's really taking off and helping job seekers or people who are just maybe unhappy in their profession with everything from professionalism to job search to all sorts of things. But for me, it really extends even beyond sort of that entry-level boss. It actually could help so many people who are of any age, really, or any stage of their life crisis. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty good thing. So, Alexa, could you tell us a little bit about Entry-Level Boss, maybe how it came to be, what it is, better than I can describe?
Yeah, I can, absolutely. And this is, I think, why I'm most excited to talk to you guys in the HR world, because I feel like it's two sides of the table coming together for the big meeting. So basically, Entry Level Boss is a newsletter that I started almost exactly 1 year ago to the day. And effectively, I had the worst time joining the real world after college. Like I said, I went to Notre Dame, got a great degree. Obviously, I've got an incredible alumni network there. But the problem is that all my friends went on to be accountants and lawyers and join Deloitte or maybe BCG. And then I went off to do this master's in jazz performance. And so by the time I get home, you know, with this American obligation inside me to go find a 401k, whatever that meant, I knew that I was going to join, you know, the full-time work world. I knew I was going to get a job in PR and marketing. And I find that especially in those careers where you don't have this, you know, set, like in the big four, for example, right? You have this crop of new talent that gets hired in every year, and they get hired in the fall. And so by the time they graduate college, they've already got this big, nice career to go on to, or so they think anyways. But in my position, I just didn't know where to start. I didn't know anyone who worked in PR and marketing. I, you know, got my first job with this sort of hourly internship in, I kid you not, a windowless office in San Francisco. And I was just sort of doing these cold outreach emails all day for this PR office. I quit that job. I got another job through a Notre Dame alumni who is the VP of marketing for an online education startup out in San Francisco, started working for them. And for me, I just felt like there was some sort of information missing. And I, as you can kind of tell, I'm pretty creative and ambitious and go-getter. And so I was sort of making all this stuff up as I went along for how I was possibly going to get a job, that wasn't one of these giant, you know, one size fits all graduate scheme at Target corporate, let's brainwash 300 kids into working for us for the next 40 years. So that's sort of what this whole entry-level boss thing has been about for me, is for people who are in my situation, or really in any situation where they're being forced to think outside the box for the first time, looking at their career, and it's not just going in this straight path anymore, as so many careers are not. As we all know, you know, recruiters are looking at something really, really different than what job seekers are looking at. And they're often on different timelines, and there's often misinformation on both sides. So I'm just trying to help people who are at least early in their career, or maybe have gotten stuck into a job that they really don't like and wish they were doing something else, to try to navigate that path and get themselves, you know, as far ahead in the game as possible, as quickly as they can, through things that I teach my clients with content marketing and communication strategy.
And so are you, when you started it, were you thinking more about the things that were specifically working for you and sort of trying to carve out this new perfect world of work for you? Or where are you getting sort of your information or inspiration?
Yeah, well, I think I actually, like you mentioned, we just recorded our first podcast today. And I'm co-hosting it with another woman called Hannelisa Hofferkamp, who is a friend of mine here in Berlin. And we're basically just talking about how if we don't give this advice, we're not sure who can, because as well-intentioned as career advice is from the generation above us, you know, or two or three generations above us, I should say, it all starts to feel dramatically outdated in a lot of situations really quickly. And so, you know, instead of me sitting here and pointing and saying, I figured it all out and you should do X, Y, Z. I mean, I know you read my newsletter, Trish. I literally am like, okay, well, like, here's how I got this meeting with this recruiter. All right, now here's how that meeting went. You know, here's this exact cover letter that I wrote the other day, and I actually wrote it like a BuzzFeed listicle, and they called me back for an interview. And granted, I'm also coming from a very non-corporate background, and I'm a great writer, and so I'm shelling out a lot of advice from that perspective. But what I'm finding is that even in giant corporations, the first point of contact for any of these cover letters or resumes or whatever is going to be some 26-year-old junior recruiter anyways, and you want to make their life a little bit more entertaining, and that's going to be your first foot in the door.
Yeah, hey, Alexa, I think that's some – you made some really good points that kind of resonated with me too. One is like I just cringe a little bit, and this is not Trish or me. Let's just be very clear about this. But I cringe I cringe a little bit when I see like more – let's just say more experienced folks trying to position themselves as, you know, for lack of a better term, the millennial career experts, right? And and their advice is all the same, and it's all boring, and it's a little disjointed, and it's often contradictory too. And this is maybe not, you know, just millennial type or entry level career advice, but just in general career advice, it's so contradictory. Like, you know, leave a bad job. If you have a bad job, you need to leave it, but don't be a job hopper, you know, or, you know,
right.
you need a great cover letter. Oh, no one reads cover letters, you know? And it's like, you can go on and on about the advice is generally terrible, and it's contradictory, and it sucks, and it's coming from the wrong people. So I think that, you know, it makes sense that you're by you and your co-host sharing your experiences of what you're actually doing day to day, week to week, month to month. I think that's much more relevant and will resonate better. Even if you can't solve all their problems, at least you can – you have some shared experiences with the people you're talking to, it sounds to me like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's – you know, they always say that the trick is to only be one step ahead of your audience, right? And so that's where I feel like I am. And when I started Entry Level Boss this time last year, I still sort of felt the almost PTSD symptoms of my first terrible job experiences. And it's funny because in this last year, I've sort of moved into transitioning to feel like a real adult. And so I don't really remember that panic that I felt anymore. But I remember that that's why I started this newsletter, and how just confused I was and how little information there was. And I go back a lot and see if I can find old emails that I wrote when I was first trying to look for a job, you know, and I'm using these words and I don't know what they mean. And I say, I want a job in marketing, but what the heck does that even mean? And so just trying to get people to be, you know, really thinking about things that we aren't really taught at university. Like, it's a difficult challenge, but I'm trying to at least show my experience.
Well, I think that's what drew me to it, because even though I'm not, you know, a job seeker and I'm not a millennial, I think that there were enough of us, if you look at sort of Gen X, I think, which Steve and I both fall into, the way that
that's
we
right,
were
– That's right, Gen X.
Yeah.
You're barely. I was being
Represent.
Generous. no, but, you know, I remember entering the job market, and it was – we were being trained by the baby boomers, and so the approach was very different to us. It was sort of like, you know, get a job, keep your damn mouth shut, do what you're told, pay your dues, work 70, 80 hours a week, you know, don't complain. It was very, very different in the sense that we didn't feel empowered maybe to have other avenues to get work. And where I think now what's interesting to me, at least looking at what you're doing, is that it's taken me until I'm 45 years old to finally really have that confidence where I was willing to just completely go out on my own and do something different and make my own work and make my own way. And I love the fact that you're doing that 20 years sooner.
Thank you.
I feel like there's something so valuable there, because there are so many people, even in their 20s, who just don't know what to do. And to have you as a resource is just brilliant, truly. So kudos on starting it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And just to hit on something you said about the, you know, Gen X being trained by the baby boomers and this and that and whatever. And Steve, what you were mentioning about so many people acting like they're millennial career experts or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I can completely understand where all this misinformation comes from, or misperception about the millennial generation and us being all entitled and they gave us all trophies during softball and whatever. But what I see, if you sort of flip the coin, you know, you just mentioned it, Trish, about work 70 or 80 hours a week, keep your mouth shut, this and that and whatever. I think especially the two of you know more than anyone in the HR world that there's now, I think, this lingering, dying myth of company loyalty and the company being loyal to you. And that's just not happening anymore. And, you know, giant sections of jobs, or, you know, giant industries are dying out every, what, 36 months, you know? And it's the statistic that as a millennial, I'm not going to have 15 jobs, I'm going to have 15 different careers. And so if you don't know how to take your own career into your own hands and actually maneuver your path, you're going to get left behind. Like, not even to mention stagnant wages and decreased benefits and all that stuff. But, you know, if you just assume that the company is going to take care of you, like, are we joking? That's not going to happen anymore. Even if you are in a big corporate company, you know, unless you're in the top 10% of the whatever financial leadership development program at Johnson & Johnson, you don't really have a golden ticket anymore.
Yeah, even then, I don't think you do. And I think that's the problem for those of us who are in our 40s. We were sort of raised up one way, being told, you know, you work hard, you're here, you learn, you know, you pay your dues. It's turning out that's really not what works, because you said it, the companies are no longer loyal to you. And so it's very hard to sort of buy into it. But by the time you're in your 40s, then you may not, if you've not done any preparation all these years, you may not even have any other options of what you could possibly do. So you're stuck with where you are until they get rid of you.
Yeah, it's probably a show, another show, another topic, Trish. But, like, you know, the funny thing is, while that sort of contract, that employee-employer contract is broken down, and we pretty much all sort of agree on it, the employers are much slower to adjust than the employees have, because the employees get forced to adjust, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lack of loyalty and the lack of commitment on, you know, becomes very apparent to employees really quickly the first time they're downsized. But while you're employed, right? the employers still think, just Trish, right? We've been through this before. Like, you know, don't post X and Y and Z on social media. Don't have a meeting with such and such a person. Don't you dare be seen with that kind of person, right? Because they're they're a competitor to us, right? So.
And you know what though, Steve? On that note, I think though it's like those of us, like you and I, you know, I'm speaking definitely for me. When you get fed up and you're willing to just say, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to post what I want to post. I'm going to be who I want to be. I'm going to tweet what I want to tweet, you know, and I don't really care about the employer to that degree. Like if they want the real Trish, then they can have real Trish. But otherwise, I really don't want to be somewhere anymore where they don't want that. It's empowering, but my God, we're like in the minority, you know, everyone else is still like, oh, I'll, you know, I can't blog because my employer says no, or I can't tweet because my employer says no, or, you know, I just feel like I feel so much more connected to someone like Alexa where they're already thinking this way earlier on in the career. And I related to that immediately when I started reading
the worst is I saw this today. Somebody sent me a LinkedIn connection the other day, or maybe it was today. I can't remember. And it was a, you know, such and such name, a person I don't know. Her title was corporate recruiter at Company Confidential. That was the title. It's like, no. You can't, and you see this a lot. It's like, we can't even say the company we're with on LinkedIn. That's how crazy we've gotten. I was
That's just messed up. That's just messed up.
Trish, this has been a loads of fun. We should probably wrap it up. It is Friday afternoon. It is Friday night in Berlin. Alexa.
That's right. Alexa, what time is it there?
It's 7:38 p.m.
I have a very important question. I have a very important question before we wrap it up, though. I haven't been to Germany yet myself, and I'm trying to get over there as soon as I can. But what's the German beer I should have if I go to Germany? I do like German beer, but what's the one I should have, like, if I go there?
Ooh, you know what? I am totally the right and the wrong person to ask on that. Oh man, I'm a big fan of all the Weiss beers, the wheat beers, but because I'm in Berlin, and so Berlin is sort of like the Austin, Texas, like we're not like the rest of Germany necessarily, and so there's a big craft beer scene in Berlin right now. So Stone Brewing is opening a big giant brewery and restaurant here. There's a whole bunch of local German breweries that are opening up, you know, smaller microbreweries. So we've got such a big sampling.
I have got to get there. So let's make sure we give this out on the show before we wrap it up. Alexa, how do folks get connected with Entry Level Boss, as well as one more time find the new album?
Yeah, absolutely. So the album is called The Human Jukebox Project. And if you give that a quick Google, I should pop up right away. And you can also just search for my website, which is alexashone.com. And you can also go on entrylevelboss.com and sign up for our newsletter, which comes out once a week, and the upcoming podcast, which will be up in a couple weeks, the first episodes. And that's where it's all happening.
And where can they follow you on Snapchat? Is it Alexa Showtime?
Most importantly, so that Trish has a fellow stalker.
That's right.
Yeah, no. My Snapchat is Alexa Showtime.
Okay. I don't think it counts as a stalker anymore now that I know you, right? Doesn't that mean that we're just friends now?
I actually was just mentioning you earlier today when I was saying, yeah, I'm going to be in this podcast. It's my new best friend from Snapchat. Her name is Trish.
I could say, Alexa, it's almost certain I will not be following you on Snapchat. Trish showed me how to work it the other day, and I forgot.
Steve, she might have seen you when we were at the Oscar preview show.
Maybe.
Hollywood.
That's a very confusing scene over there. So
I tried to teach him Snapchat because I was going crazy as I was, you know, in Hollywood trying to snap everything in sight. So.
Of course. Well, we'll get you there eventually, Steve.
I'll try again. Trish and I are going to be at here we go. This is a good segue into wrap up the show. Trish and I will be at Oracle HCM World in a couple of weeks. We'll be doing some HR happy hour stuff there and doing a few other things too. And so maybe we can do some Snapchatting, Trish. You can show me how to work it again at HCM
World.
Yeah,
we're going to be interviewing HR executives who are attending HCM World. So I think that's going to be an actually fun way to find out what's really on the minds of all the HR leaders this year.
Yeah, it's going to be loads of fun.
And then after that, big news, right? Where are we going after that?
We are going to China, HR Tech China. I don't know, Trish. I just hope when it's all over, you're going to say to yourself, "How did you?" how did that jerk convince me to make this trip? But it's going to be super fun. HR Tech China in Zhuhai, China, middle of April. Some of our friends will be there. Madeline Lorano's coming. Trish is coming. A few other folks you know, Kevin Wheeler, Jason Averbuch, myself, Ray Wang, thousands of Chinese. So it's going to be fantastic. So we're looking forward to that as well.
Should be good.
All right, Trish, I think we should wrap. Alexa, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great to meet you.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and I'm sure we'll snap soon.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it from the HR Happy Hour show. Make sure to find us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you use to listen to your podcast. Just search for HR Happy Hour. Subscribe. Never miss a show. HRHappyHour.net. Trish, we'll see you next time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.